We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, still way over there, Dan Rubenstein in sunny Southern California. Sir, how you doing?
I'm great, Ty. I am great, and thank you for asking. We've been planning this show for a while. We have a lot to get to, both in the present tense, both in the past tense. Then we'll go into the future. I'm excited to check off as many of these stories and, honestly, awkward moments. And if there's anything that I feel like we've lost, maybe these past couple years, as I've transitioned away from the daily grind of working for a media company, one of those big corporate entities, whatever, is trying to make you feel awkward and to put you on the spot,
oh,
knowing that
goody, I can't wait.
No.
Goody,
knowing
goody,
that
goody.
Your mom listens, knowing that perhaps people at your secret day job listen,
great.
Maybe some friends listen.
Thanks, Dan.
Who could follow up and give additional information, fill in some blanks. I love all of this. So I want to get back to our roots here.
Generally, I like to say that we're not just co-hosts, we're very good friends, but
yeah.
Tonight, depending on the direction things go, might challenge that assertion. Not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. I like it. We got to push ourselves, Ty. That's what we have to do always, to be the best and worst possible podcast hosts.
Welcome back to our show. If you don't already subscribe, please do so. You can find the Solid Verbal all year long, wherever you find your podcasts. You can find it out on Spotify, out on Apple, out on Google. Again, any app, anywhere, anytime, subscribe to the show. And we would urge you to sign up for the newsletter. We're going to use that as kind of our first line of defense when it comes to new announcements. But I guess the announcement for the moment and the announcement that we'll be sending out a little bit later on today for some of you who may be listening bright and early as soon as we drop the show. But typically, we would wait a little bit longer until we snap into our two show per week format.
Right.
Because these are weird times, perhaps end times, who knows? We have decided that we're going to start up this week. So today, you've got a show. This is Wednesday. This is June the 16th. Our next one will be released on June the 18th, bright and early on Friday morning, Dan.
Yes. So for the time being, two shows a week, Wednesday and Friday, released at 6 a.m. And then we're ramping up even more with, we hope, the season and the season previews ramping up and all sorts of new platform things we are doing. So I would definitely, by the way, keep track of all of this by signing up for the newsletter of intent on solidverbal.com. All of this information and more information goodies, insights will be in that newsletter. That will be something that we're leaning on, not just when the season begins, but as the season grows nearer. Is that right?
I think that's right. And believe me, there is more to come. We are very busy these days in the Solid Verbal Laboratory. So again, going out to solidverbal.com, sign up for our newsletter. It's a big old sign up form right under the main area. You can't miss it. Just give us your email. We won't spam you. We're going to use it for the time being as a means of getting those announcements out to you. And also another way that you can figure out what's going on in the Verbalerhood is by following us on social media. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've got an Instagram account, which is just so hot right now. Not going to lie. Very hot right now on the Insta.
It's equal parts. I've taken full control over Instagram as well, and it's equal parts very easy and cheap Michigan jokes, and then very obscure references to Japanese funk and ECU's quarterback. So there's something for everybody, Ty. That's what I'm saying about our Instagram feed. And we're actually taking, you know, we took questions for this episode from Instagram. We took it from our last Q&A from Instagram. There's a lot of really active people there because that's where the youths are, Ty. That's where the youths are. So we are becoming more active on Instagram, and it's been very fun because we're connecting with more people. That's been the whole joy of it. I love it.
That is what we are all about, for sure. And then the only other thing that I would add is if you aren't already part of our teaming community of Verballers out there at solidverbal.reddit.com, if you want to continue the discussion even after the show concludes, you can go on out there and talk with other members, other proud members of the Verballerhood.
Okay, so some possible topics for the subreddit. What's Ty's day job?
No.
Is Dan the most handsome college football podcaster? If not, who is? Will Ty ever reveal his secret day job?
Nope, never.
How tall is Ty? Let's look at some photographic evidence. Stuff like that.
A lot of intrigue around me. I don't understand it.
You know why? I can tell you why it is. I'm an open book. People are sick of the details I give about my life, but you're it's that J.J. Abrams, what's in the box?
Yeah. Okay.
What's in Ty's brain? You're giving people, you're giving them that sweet sugar water, Ty, that they want more.
Man of mystery. I can take it. I'm fine with
that's
that.
That's true.
All right. Well, the topic of tonight's show, the main topic of tonight's show is we're going to be talking about third year head coaches, and we'll get to that momentarily because we prepared accordingly. Got questions from all throughout the Verballerhood. I'm excited to talk about that topic. But before we do, there's more news here in the world of college football. We expected it would get a little weird as we got closer to the season. Obviously, circumstances have made it a little bit more challenging. We'll start with the situation at Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy pictured as part of a fishing trip wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
A shirt for a news network. That news network set off Chuba Hubbard, as well as other members of the Oklahoma State team. Chuba tweeted out about how that was unacceptable. He would not be doing anything more for Oklahoma State until the situation was dealt with. It seems as if Gundy and Hubbard made good. They were featured in a video that was also posted on social media. I don't know how long after the initial event occurred, but a few hours. It seems as if they were able to clean that one up relatively quickly, Dan. But for sure, everyone in college football media for the span of about 2 hours was tweeting about Oklahoma State and which direction things could go unless this was handled appropriately.
Yeah, and he actually, just before we hit record, and I don't know if you saw this because you were busy with other stuff too, there was another video, Mike Gundy solo video, apologizing and clarifying his stance and talking about he didn't know the things that some talent or hosts on the network One American News.
Yes, is it correct?
Sometimes I see OAN, sometimes I see OANN. And I'm not sure which it is, but whatever it is, he clarified his stance that he does not stand with the comments made by hosts about Black Lives Matter, because there were some antagonizing remarks and they were the sort of making a mockery of the movement. So he wanted to make that clear to both Oklahoma State fans, college football fans, Oklahoma State players, people within the athletic department. And so I suppose good for him for, you know, hammering that point home. It would have been nice to me, speak for myself here, if he we're just a little bit more plain, a little bit more human in his language. It was very clearly pre-written, and I don't know if he was reading from a teleprompter. It was not the sort of off-the-cuff Mike Gundy that perhaps he's seen doing a lot. And Ty, I don't want to belabor this point. I don't. First of all, who wears a News Network shirt?
That was my question. What is this?
So I thought about this, and there are, and I'm not making light of the situation I think it's a very serious situation, and I totally understand the attitude from Chuba Hubbard and Oklahoma State teammates of his that have that enough is enough
feeling.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That is what I really do understand and see what they're saying. It's a weird thing. He was out fishing, so maybe he thought it was sort of a throwaway shirt that he was sent because he made comments talking about how he liked the network in April, I believe. And so maybe they sent him a shirt and he just wore it because it was a shirt he could trash with fish guts and he didn't feel bad. Because if you've watched that news station, Ty, I don't care your ideologies. I don't care where you land politically. It's a cheap-ass news network, right? The graphics are cheap. The camera work is cheap. The hosts are kind of weird-looking.
There's a little bit of Jefferson Pilot Sports going on there.
Yes, and I remember owning LA Gears because my parents forced me to buy my shoes. They did not buy me shoes, and LA Gears were a lot cheaper than Reeboks when it came to buying pumps. And they were fine, but they fell apart real quick. And so that's the vibe I got from that LA Gear-ass network. Okay. So that out of the way. The fact that he wears this shirt knowing that coaches and college football programs are getting more attention in this way, it's obviously quite tone deaf. And there is, maybe he is just that ignorant to the spotlight, but it seems a coach that's been there since, 2005? So we're talking about 15 years. At this point, should understand what happens in terms of media and spotlight and everything that's going on now. So when he sees that, when Chuba Hubbard sees that, and given everything going on and given what he probably is thinking about in terms of what he thinks the culture should be at Oklahoma State and how it should be changing, and then sees that, I get the enough is enough thing. I really, really do. And I've seen people point to, and this is Dan's straw man argument of the week, point to, well, if he were wearing a CNN shirt or an MSNBC shirt, we wouldn't be talking. Maybe. And there is definitely a bigger conversation to be had by smarter people than you and I about legislative and social history and about the failure of leadership across all political and ideological parties. That's all true. And how kind of awful cable news is across the board and how it poisons people's brains, especially people over 50. I think that's a conversation that could be had by smarter people and has. But as it relates to Oklahoma State and Chuba Hubbard, I can fully see where he's coming from. And if that's in effect affecting change and the culture is going to get better and there's going to be more listening and more empathy, it's a net win. And we saw it with, I think it's Brendan Eagles at Texas. Did you see his statement, Ty?
I saw that, yeah.
About the steps that he and other Texas athletes want the university and the athletic department to take in order to be more empathetic and listening more and taking more proactive steps towards social equality. This is happening all over the country. And it feels to me like a net positive that there's going to be more empathy, more understanding, more listening. So all apologies to LA Gear. I did like my knockoff Reebok pumps, but I understand where Chuba Hubbard and his teammates were coming from, and Mike Gundy needs to be a lot better, both in terms of optics and what appears to be running a culture at Oklahoma State.
Well, we'll see. We'll see where it goes from here. It seems like in the video they made good, and weirdly, Chuba was the one apologizing. I didn't see the latest video.
Yeah, that was a very strange initial video
from Gundy. But it seems, at least for the time being, everyone is rowing in the same direction. And we hope nothing but the best for that program. Elsewhere in college football, Iowa strength coach Chris Doyle, we discussed him previously. Remember, we talked about the culture at Iowa. Former players had come out. It seemed to center around Chris Doyle. He was placed on administrative leave while the university investigated the situation. He has subsequently been fired in light of that investigation, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, we had talked about this being all but a certainty. And so what's done is now done. And hopefully Iowa's culture is better for the absence of Chris Doyle and what was allowed to keep happening within that program and that culture.
if I could make an awkward turn now into just another weird thing going on in the world.
The
thing going on in the world, yeah. Coronavirus, clearly going to have an outsized impact on the 2020 college football season. Again, we don't really know. We're taking this leap of faith. We're going to be doing more shows. We're going to be getting prepped for the season. We don't really, truly know if there's going to be one. We feel like there will be. We feel confident in that to some degree, but you don't really know what's going to happen with this pandemic. And I think some schools are finding that out. I don't want to say the hard way, but in a very real way, we've seen positive coronavirus tests now at Texas Tech, Baylor, Kansas State, Clemson, Louisiana Tech, Houston, Texas, Alabama, Iowa State, and Auburn. My guess is, I don't know how many schools I named off there, 10, 12.
Yeah.
There will be many, many more. But I would be very surprised if there are any schools around the country that are ultimately spared by this, because as you know, the virus doesn't have a rooting interest here. The virus is a thing. It's still out there. It's still growing in large part. And this is going to be the challenge of the 2020 season. You might recall a few episodes ago, we discussed the challenges around testing and the cost of it all, but the protocols and procedures and just how this is going to be handled in the 2020 season. It is truly a maze, and I think we're going to see more of this.
Oh, we're definitely going to see more of it. And I think the good news, if there is any sort of silver lining to all of this, is there is so much attention on how these programs are running and how they are reacting to positive tests, be them symptomatic or asymptomatic, to players and athletes around athletic departments. There's so much attention, and the magnifying glass is so pronounced that we're not going to be able to have schools, it seems, be able to sweep things under the rug, that the protocols are going to have to be very public. And if players test positive, no matter how big, no matter how small, no matter how big the group, that they're going to have to take necessary steps to quarantine and isolate and treat, no matter the effect it has on competition. And, you know, if it ends the season, if too many players get it, if whatever that number is, where too many teams are saying this is too much of a risk and too many teams are shutting down their season, we need to find a TV show with many episodes. What do you think about Doctor Who? I feel like there are like 300 to 400 of those episodes that we really can deep dive.
What's that show on Netflix that you started me on?
Oh, the worst show ever produced, Selling Sunset?
Oh, that show is terrible. That is terrible, that show.
I have a lot of thoughts, though.
Yeah.
This is going to have to turn into a very specific college football podcast about non-college football things. I hope that's not the case, because I have a lot of college football things to say, and I have a lot of college football things to say about today's topic, dubbed by me, what, the junior prom?
Junior prom. Shall we dive in?
I'd love to.
It's just all of us together in this one perfect moment.
So today, Dan, we're talking a little junior prom, aren't we?
We are talking junior prom. The idea be
junior prom.
All right, easy on the easy.
Sorry.
The idea is, we every year, all sorts of new coaches get hired, and we say, ooh, wow, that seems like a home run hire to me, Ty. Ooh, seems like a big old whiff. I don't know if that fits at all. And we never fully come back to a class of new coaches, or we haven't specifically. And because it's June, because we have this opportunity to look at the entirety of the sport, or at least big swaths of the sport at a time, I thought today would be a good opportunity to evaluate the class of, I think it's 2018 would have been their first season. So let's call it that. The 2018 class going into their third year or junior year in college football parlance. So I'd like to ask a few questions, and we have a lot of questions from listeners to get to. I guess we can run through real quick some of the names from the class of 2018 that people had questions about and that we're going to talk about. So these are coaches going into their third season. Does that all sound right?
Yeah, into their third season. And just to paint a more complete picture, we have also included, at least in our master list, and I know we got some questions about these guys as well, five coaches who have since been fired.
Yeah.
So included in that class.
They transferred to another school.
Yeah, didn't make it to junior prom.
Yeah.
Joe Moorhead, Matt Luke, Willie Taggart, Chad Morris, and I highlighted Jonathan Smith here, but he's definitely still at Oregon State. So I guess four coaches.
You still have a job, Jonathan Smith, if you're listening, and you're trending in the right direction.
Trending in the right direction. Why don't we start with some of our own questions here?
Okay.
If that works for you. So I'm looking at, I've got my coaches ordered by win total.
Oh, okay.
Smart. All right. I went through, did a little research. I know it's odd. Took a look to see who had the best record among all these coaches. You want to take a guess?
I mean, Josh Heupel's won a bunch of games. That'd be, I guess, my
Josh
initial
Heupel,
guess.
22-4 at UCF.
I don't have the list in front of me of total wins. So that
after
was
taking over
by me.
For Scott Frost. Let me read through some of these, okay? Just to,
please do.
Just
read,
to provide
read,
some context.
Yeah.
Dan Mullen, 21-5. Mario Cristobal, 21-6. Billy Napier, 18-10. We've got Jimbo Fisher and Chad Lunsford at Georgia Southern.
Yep.
Herm Edwards at 15-11. Jeremy Pruitt, 13-12. Scott Frost and Kevin Sumlin. Ooh, that's interesting. At 9-15. Yep. Chip Kelly at 7-17, along with Jonathan Smith. The aforementioned Jonathan Smith still has a job.
Still has a job. Yeah, yeah.
At Oregon State. So let's take a look at that class, Dan. And
Sonny Dykes. Did you mention Sonny Dykes?
Did I mention
15.
Sonny Dykes? No, I didn't mention Sonny Dykes.
I'm throwing Sonny Dykes in there. 15 wins. Good job, Sonny Dykes.
All right. So compared to the programs that these guys took over, who are your biggest winners?
I think that's pretty straightforward. I think Mario Cristobal winning the Pac-12 with Oregon, winning the Rose Bowl in year two is a big winner. I think Dan Mullen, in terms of getting to a New Year's Six game, decisively winning with a backup quarterback, so a degree of difficulty there, recruiting pretty well. I know Florida fans, and we'll get to it, you know, are worried about the trajectory of Dan Mullen in terms of the ceiling. Billy Napier has to be considered a winner after his year two. Josh Heupel, even with a step back in year two, that's, you know, you can, the Mackenzie Milton thing and relying on a true freshman quarterback, mostly good. And they did lose a bunch of close games. I think he's a big winner, maybe. And I think Sonny Dykes, with how he was able to repopulate that program with a lot of transfers, both grad and junior college, and just standard transfers. I think it was something like 50 or 60 new faces in the past year and a half or something like that for SMU. So to get them to 10 wins, 10-2 during the regular season in year two, I think he's a big winner. I think that's it in terms of the word big and winner.
Well,
but there's
big,
other positives I'm taking.
So big and winner is I want to talk to you about that a little bit. So, you know,
let's
like Dan Mullen, right? Dan Mullen, it's hard to argue with two double-digit win campaigns in your first 2 years at any school. I don't care where it
is. For
and
sure.
I think we would agree Florida is still learning to harness its offense under Dan Mullen. He's still kind of getting his guys in there. It's been a very successful 2 years. There is reason for optimism in Florida, for sure.
For sure. Yep.
And Mario Cristobal, like Mullen, you can't argue against 21 wins in two seasons. What I like about him is the toughness that he's brought to Oregon. I like the way he's constructing that team now. It feels very sustainable. So you have reason to be excited. And down at UCF, Josh Heupel, I'm actually a little surprised at how well he's done taking over for Scott Frost. Has a lot of the same players, which helps, but he has been very successful. Again, 22 wins in two seasons. My question, though, around the big winners part of this is whether or not we can consider Jonathan Smith in that conversation.
That's what I was going to bring up. I'm totally fine with it.
Jonathan Smith, again, 7-17. First season was, 2-10. Last year went 5-7. But I think the turnaround that we've seen at Oregon State has really been remarkable. This is a flaming pile of garbage when he took over. And last year, Oregon State
was... The last coach left. Just, I got to go.
This guy just got to get out.
5 or 6 games in. Gary Anderson, I got to go.
I got places to be, man. And last year, from that flaming pile of garbage, even in year one, they were much better at 2-10. A lot better. And last year, they were damn plucky. They were plucky in a lot of those games. And so I don't know which direction they go in 2020. We can talk about that when we get to previews next month. But I would think, given where they started from, if this is a relative measure, Jonathan Smith has to be considered a quote unquote big winner.
Yeah, even the games they lost last season, I don't know what they were, and they think they got just trounced by Utah, but otherwise they lost decisively to Oklahoma State, but Hawaii is close, Stanford is close, Washington is close, even the Oregon loss in the Civil War, I think they held them to 17 offensive points. They gave up a touchdown on a kickoff return, and obviously Wazoo was that crazy last second, it was 50-something to 50-something in a loss, so... In terms of, it's not just 5-7 and losing three or four games by 17 points. It's in or impressive in all of those losses, perhaps other than that Utah game, which you're talking about things going another way. They're 7-5, 8-4. So they're trending in such a direction that the degree of difficulty, even though he has fewer wins than some other names on this list, from where they're coming from and how he himself has stocked the program, a lot of transfers. He's hired really well coaching wise. Yeah, I'm good with him as a big winner.
Now, our second question, I'm just going to do this, okay?
Okay.
Who isn't winning big, but who at least feels like they're trending in the right direction, i.e., who do you think feels a little poke coming through, Dan?
I don't like that at all, that phrasing.
Who's poking through, Dan?
Who's getting close? Well, too
just
close.
A little too close.
You said you got a couple stories about that with your dance history.
Incorrect. Continue.
I'm certain Jeremy Pruitt is in this category with how Tennessee ended their season last year. And let's be clear, they were not at all prepared to begin their 2019 campaign, losing the way they did those first 2 weeks. But they won their final, you know, the Tennessons, their final slew of games and became bowl eligible and have momentum, especially on the recruiting trail going into the 2020 season. And, you know, Jared Guarantano has an offensive coordinator back for the first time in his career in Jim Chaney. And defensively, they certainly took steps forward. They are one of the teams, and this is how I like to think about it. They're a team that is drafting right behind, this is drafting in terms of like how you would like run or bike right behind the person in front of you, drafting behind the opportunity truck. They're not ready to trounce anybody really good right now in the SEC, but they're ready behind that opportunity truck if something were to fall off.
Yeah.
If something were to fall off, we can pick it up.
They're ready. They're ready for that.
If Jamie Newman and the Georgia offense, it doesn't click, Tennessee's ready to take advantage. If Alabama has more injury trouble at quarterback, if for whatever reason they can't replicate what their offense was with all of those receivers, those great receivers from last year, Tennessee's ready.
So they're not like the apex predator, but they're the turkey vulture. They're the scavenger just waiting for the dead carcass.
Yeah, and that's, I think you have to be that before you become a team of killers. And so I don't ever think that they're going to be an 11-1 team with this current roster, especially on offense. You know, Jared Guarantano is nice when he's playing well, but I don't think he is that apex as you like to say. So I think they're putting themselves in a nice position. They have a quarterback of the future. I think his name is Harrison Bailey, who'll be a freshman this year. And he comes pretty well regarded as a blue chip guy. They have talent all over the place, really good corners on defense. The linebackers are promising. So where Jeremy Pruitt has this Tennessee program is impressive, but we could have said that about the last guy too in year three. So they have to, I think in looking at their schedule this year, and we'll get into it in the preview, they have to split like either beating Florida at home or winning in Norman against a first year quarterback. That there has to be that step forward to me that they start the season, I think it's either 3-1 or 4-1.
Yeah, I've got Pruitt here as well. And, you know, I think you added a lot of detail there that is meaningful and needed.
Thank you.
For this, you're welcome for this conversation. But I would just add that I remember talking about the Tennessons towards the end of last year. And Tennessee, you know, maybe it's not all where it needs to be right now to be any kind of SEC East contender, but they did play hard. And it does feel as if things are going in a good direction. A little poke, Dan, I would say. Just a little poke. You're starting to feel it.
Think about it. Ty, who they beat down the stretch last year. Doesn't that feel like an opportunity truck stretch where you have Mizzou completely careening out of control? You got to beat Mizzou. You have Mississippi State going through the issues that they had, and that was not a pretty game. Tennessee wins it. Kentucky doesn't have a quarterback. They have Lynn Bowden Jr., who's arguably scarier than a quarterback, but they don't have a passing threat. Tennessee takes advantage. Yeah. Tennessee is drafting off the opportunity truck pretty well right now, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
I got Jimbo Fisher in this category.
As do I.
Jimbo Fisher right now, again, through two seasons, is at 17-9, had a killer schedule a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, it was comical how difficult that schedule was. Yep. But I still believe in Jimbo. He has done a really good job on the recruiting trail. And I think before long, that'll start to pay dividends in a big way. We actually got a question here about Jimbo, which we'll get into momentarily, asking where he ranks in the pecking order in the SEC West. We'll get there. But yeah. It's just so tough to rate teams in the SEC West, knowing how loaded it is. But I feel confident in what he brings to the table. I feel confident in what we've seen, the returns we've seen on the recruiting trail. And in this era of win now or go home, I just think it's going to take him a little bit of time to get his guys in there, to get a system in there. And I would fully expect they're going to be competing fairly regularly for the SEC West.
Yeah, their last two full recruiting classes were number 4 and 6 nationally. I don't know where it stacks up in terms of average recruit rating, but they've put together really impressive classes, pretty complete, thorough classes these past couple of years, and I imagine they will this round as well. They have two blue chip quarterbacks behind Kellen Mond, and their youth is stacked. I think you have to be encouraged if you're an A&M fan about potentially what this depth chart looks like these next couple years. Their offense did get worse last year. They ran the ball really well a couple years ago, culminating in that blowout of a bowl game after they had that crazy 7 overtime game against LSU. But they were generally decent in losses a couple years ago. That was the 2-point Clemson loss at home.
Right.
They blew that Auburn game. Bama wasn't pretty, but it wasn't as bad as other teams fared against Alabama. And then they just got boat raced completely by LSU this past season. But we're close against other really, really good teams like Georgia. So I think you are correct in your analysis. This year is a little bit it's new for Texas A&M because the offense needs to get better. They have experience at quarterback. They bring in James Coley, who I think is a good position coach, but not necessarily a good coordinator. He's coming in to coach tight ends. They have a new running backs coach who's super well regarded, a new linebackers coach, a new cornerbacks coach. So there is a bit of refreshing, which I actually look at as a positive. Take a couple years, you see what and who is working, what's not really working, and then sort of reprogram things, update your firmware, Ty. And I think Jimbo's done a pretty good job of that. But you're also right. It's just going to be an uphill battle. Forget LSU, forget Mississippi State, forget Ole Miss, forget Arkansas. That's fine. You're in the same division as Alabama and Auburn. And that's just any year that's going to be an extremely difficult, as you like to say, a poke breakthrough. So
sure, right.
I'm encouraged by where Jimbo Fisher is. I need a better, if he's an offensive guy, Ty, I'm going to need a top 20 offense here, right?
Well, let's talk about
with that.
With
that much talent?
Let me stay with that, and I want to move to our next category. We've labeled it basically who's not a nightmare, but who's trending in like an iffy direction.
By the way, I also have Herm.
Oh, you have Herm that high?
But trending in the right direction. Yeah, I have Herm there.
Can we save him until we get to guys that were shocked?
Yeah, there's a couple crossover categories, yeah.
Yeah, shocked are succeeding. Let's save Herm for after this next bit here, which is, again, guys who, they're not a nightmare, but we're not really sure which direction they're going. Sort of an iffy territory right now.
Right.
I've got both Scott Frost and Kevin Sumlin. Now, I said they're both 9 and 15 in 2 years. Where do you stand on these two guys? Who do you feel better about?
I would not quantify Arizona as an iffy direction right now. I think it's plummeting in Tucson.
Really?
So I just have Scott Frost in this territory, just because there were moments in year one with Adrian Martinez where there appeared to be so much promise. You rewatch that Ohio State game. I want to say it was in Columbus. the step back was pretty pronounced, though they do finish the season losing very close to Iowa in some weird, awful weather. And so that's at least a respectable way to finish out year two. I mean, if there are moral victories, I guess. I'm not encouraged by what the future of Nebraska football looks like as compared to where things left off at UCF, which we can get to.
We can. Yeah.
I would count Kevin Sumlin as plummeting. When you look at the recruiting, when you look at the results, when you look at what happened with having Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor in your backfield and not being able to generate I understand the receiver and offensive line issues, but you can't figure something out there after what they did together before he arrived. That to me is, even with a promising quarterback in Grant Gunnell, I'm just out. We have a question about Kevin Sumlin and what might happen this fall. I don't see it getting reversed.
Well, let's go to some of those questions. We'll start to weave them in a little bit here because I think this is a good place to do it.
Okay.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You got a question here that says, considering the diametrically opposed responses to their hires, what has been the difference in Herm Edwards being a relative success at ASU and right. Sumlin being a relative failure in Tucson? So a few things for me here.
Mm-hmm.
First, on the Sumlin front, last year the defense was a total disaster, and that's on top of it being pretty bad in 2018. I don't know if that's new to anything Kevin Sumlin's touched as a football coach, right? Like,
right.
Defense has not necessarily been the calling card there. What jumps out at me the most about him at Arizona is how much the offense has actually struggled. As he said, Khalil sure. Tate, J.J. Taylor, you would expect a little bit more. And especially if you go back and look what they did against the better teams in their schedule. They got destroyed. Offense yeah. was supposed to be the calling card. And I don't think that's been the case, even with some decent talent at Arizona for Sumlin. So that jumps out at me about him. And on the Herm front, look, I had Herm in my category, which maybe we can get to, about who I'm shocked is succeeding. And look, we all talked a good game. We all yucked it up with him taking over and maybe not knowing what the mascot was and saying some strange things at his introductory presser. But I do think it's fair to say it's been a relative success. The offense and defense sort of traded places in years one and two for Herm. First right. year, the offense was okay. The defense was bad. Last year, it was the opposite. It does feel like they play with a lot of fight, though. Mm-hmm. And if you look last year, I think, what, 4 of their 5 losses, something like that, were one-score games. And it feels like they've got a nice piece to build around now with Jaden Daniels. He had a really good freshman campaign, only threw 2 picks, ran for over 500 yards. Like, I don't know. It feels like that team has played well as a unit, it, albeit in ugly fashion here and there, but they've played motivated football, which is something I like to look for. And I do feel good about some of the talent that's on that roster as opposed to Arizona, which I, like you said, I'm not sure I know which direction it's headed.
I'm pretty sure. Okay, so what I see as the difference is what we generally see from successful coaches when they arrive at a school is The successful coach says, here's what I want our program to be. I'm going to go out and find the people on a coaching staff and on the football staff and in an athletic department that can help me realize my vision. This is what I want the program to be, XYZ. And Herm Edwards went to Arizona State and said, and maybe we laughed at it. I'm sure we probably had a couple chuckles at it. He said, I want to run this like an NFL franchise.
Right.
I want it to be top down. I want it to be, you know, I want this kind of structural operation going on here and this kind of structural operation going on here. I want to recruit Southern California. I want to hire people who can recruit Southern California. I admire like what Danny Gonzalez is doing at San Diego State. I admire that San Diego State 335. So I'm going to institute that. I'm going to bring in, you know, the coordinator they brought in, now his name escapes me, from Cal and Kansas, who was pretty well regarded in the industry. I'm going to recruit Jaden Daniels, and I'm going to close that deal to have a blue chip promising young quarterback. We're going to bring him in and we're going to empower him, and we like him and surround him with smart people. At Arizona, it was Kevin Sumlin saying, well, I worked with these people before. I'm going to keep Marcel Yates on because he was moderately successful at Texas A&M when they overlapped there. And for continuity's sake at Arizona, we're going to keep him on as the defensive coordinator. I'm going to bring in, I never remember if it's Noel Mazzone or Noel Mazzone, and I don't think I want to know, Ty. But I'm going to bring him from College Station as well with me. And it just felt like there was not in Kevin Sumlin's mind, I am rebooting after my experience at Texas A&M. This is everything I screwed up. This is how I'm starting over, where it just seems like he's just sort of continuing everything that was questionable at Texas A&M, continuing that same path without really self-evaluating. And so he hasn't recruited Southern California well. He hasn't recruited anywhere all that well. After everything that we learned about what he was doing at A&M, with how well he recruited in East Texas and the swag copter and everything like that, that completely ended. And so it just seemed like he wanted a job, to have a job, whereas Herm Edwards was motivated to do things in a very specific way. Will it pay off in a like Pac-12 championship or a Pac-12 South, a division championship? I'm not crazy confident, but at least, you know, they beat Oregon, a top 10 team last year, and in dramatic fashion on Saturday night on national TV. They beat Michigan State, a not great Michigan State team, but that had an audience. And they win that game in an ugly way 2 years in a row. And so they're at least performing to bigger stages. And first comes that, and then comes potentially consistency, because they're recruiting. I think they're like a top four recruiting team. There's a kind of a gulf right now after Oregon, Washington, and USC. But the focus is there. I think that's the big difference, that ASU is trying in a very real way.
Well, and we got a question from Josiah, who says, do you think Arizona State can be a Pac-12 contender? Can Herm build them into a contender? And, you know, everyone always asks this question.
Sure.
Do you think so-and-so can make so-and-so a contender? Do I think he can make it to the Pac-12 South title game? Yeah. Sure. I mean, Utah is, I guess, the top dog in the South. They're certainly the most stable at this point. But the South is kind of a mess. The North is kind of a mess. It's somewhat destabilized now with both of the Washington schools turning over their coaching situation, Stanford maybe taking a step back. So, you know, I'm not saying they're by any stretch like the favorite to make that game, but I think they're a contender insofar as, they can make that Pac-12 title game, sure.
I was just thinking about this while you were saying this. The person that might decide the Pac-12 South is Jake Bentley?
Could be.
Is Utah quarterback Jake Bentley?
It could
be. We generally know, is it Todd Orlando, new coordinator at SC? I don't know how many names there are that could be a kind of disappointment or a really nice breath of fresh air. Although we really did like watching Tyler Huntley during the regular season last year. So Utah has you know, recent quarterback success. But I think those are two of the bigger names. Jaden Daniels was inconsistent, but rose to the occasion against a team like
Only
Oregon late in the
picks.
Season. Only threw two picks, but made some huge, huge throws. And I think he had a good game against Oregon and Oregon State. So two teams that, you know, as Oregon State was not a great team, but, you know, if you're peaking later on in the season, that's something I take into account. So, yes, I think ASU is in that opportunity truck lane. that Tennessee is in, where they have positioned themselves to be more solid across the board than they were at the end of the Todd Graham era. And that's how you position yourself when USC is going through the changes and, you know, taking a gap year recruiting that they took, and UCLA not having upper level talent and perhaps not a defense that's worth anything, and Utah folding on a big stage against a talented team. So I think they can absolutely compete for the division. I don't think they're on a conference championship caliber level, but they beat the last year's champion. So sure, you know, opportunity truck.
Let me go back for a second to Scott Frost before we move on and talk about some of these other coaches, because we did get a question about him. And I think it's fair to ask at this point, is Scott Frost a good coach, or was Central Florida just a really fertile opportunity to succeed?
Yeah.
So, all right. Let me take a step back here for a second, because
take that step back.
This is going to be what, year three for Scott Frost at Nebraska?
I hope so. He's on our junior prom episode.
I think you got to give these guys some time. I think
yes,
you got
no, but continue.
Everybody got to take a breath here and give him a chance to build the system. All right, just chill. I like Scott Frost. I think he's a good coach. I think the answer here is a little bit of both, to be honest. It's partially like, okay, UCF was very fertile opportunity. They certainly didn't play a Big Ten West schedule. And right. I think that's in large part why the whole UCF national championship thing was like, haha, tongue in cheek, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's still a good coach. And I like what he is trying to
do. Why is he a good coach? Why is he a good coach?
I think he's incredibly innovative.
Make that case.
I think he's incredibly innovative on offense. And
is
I know.
He? Or is he just
so.
A Chip Kelly guy?
No, I think he's innovative on offense.
Okay.
I do. And I know Nebraska fans may contend that point after what they've seen. But
he's calling the plays. This is his offense.
I still feel like he's an innovative guy on the offensive side of the ball. And I am maybe more willing than most to give him some time. The truth of the matter is he did do a really good job at UCF. He did build that program up to a large extent and got them at least into that national conversation because they were so high powered on offense. Could have been partially the schedule, could have been partially because it's a fertile opportunity, as our question asker worded it. But I do think he deserves more time in Lincoln. Let's see what he can do with another year of Adrian Martinez and,
okay.
You know, maybe the benefit of some more recruiting.
I would have hoped to have been, this is such bad grammar, Ty. I apologize to all of our English teachers out there. I wish I were more optimistic going into year three. And Scott Frost has always been extremely realistic about there is a lot of work to do. I don't see a lot of guys on this roster, things like that. He would start sentences in that fashion a lot. So it's not as if he has been publicly disappointed with what he thought he had. God, this grammar is all over the place, Ty. But to the listener's point, the 2017 American Athletic Conference, Ty, you have year one, Cincinnati, 4-8. Year one, Luke Fickell, Cincinnati, 4-8. Year one, Jeff Collins, 7-6. You have a good South Florida year, a 10-win South Florida year. And the other side, Memphis is good, but it's year one Major Applewhite, 7-5. You have Navy as a 500 team. They finished season 7-6. I think it's the final season of Chad Morris, 7-6 SMU. So certainly that conference has come, even in just a couple years, a pretty long way with the really strong coaching hires and performances, yeah. Even though Jeff Collins has now left. He did good things at Temple. Temple keeps winning games. Temple beat Memphis this past year. I just, maybe with only 2 years at UCF, you have 1 year to just turn things around, and they finish, 6-7 year one, and then they go undefeated. I'm not saying anybody could have done that job, because the steps that offense took with Mackenzie Milton and just putting up points and finishing the year that they did, beating Auburn, he did a flat out really good job. But also the situation was pretty good. The situation was pretty good for UCF. And coming into the situation he came into at Nebraska with the talent that Mike Riley left behind, or lack thereof, with the coaching that those guys had, with the depth chart, with the malaise, I feel like, in, well, not malaise, but the expectations that were way out of whack given where Nebraska fans generally are. I think it's such an uphill battle. And for him to go into year three and say, I don't know who we have playmaker-wise on offense beyond Wandale Robinson. I don't know who we're going to stop up front on defense. That's a problem to me. Year three is when you're supposed to have a concept for how all of the gears and pistons are going to be firing, Ty, and I don't see it.
I'm looking at their schedule for this coming season.
Yeah, I know. You're 7-0.
7-0. 7-0 feels like it is on... It is on the table. It is possible. Okay. First sure. seven games. You ready? You want to hear it?
I would love to.
Purdue.
Okay.
Central Michigan. South Dakota State. Jackrabbits. Cincinnati. Northwestern. Illinois. And Rutgers. The first seven games. Feel okay those?
Not about Cincinnati. Once again, no.
But the other ones. You feel pretty good about 6-1,
really,
right?
Strong team.
Final five.
Relatively. We're going to have a much healthier Purdue team.
All right. Don't go through
early
all these.
On. Okay. You just did.
No. Final five games. Go through these. At Ohio State.
Ugh.
Home against Penn State.
Right.
At Iowa. At Wisconsin. And then home to close out the year against Minnesota.
Yeah. I don't feel great.
If Scott Frost goes 7-5. Even if he goes 6-6 with that schedule, you think that'll be a success, or will Huskers fans be upset?
Oh, it will definitely not be a success. And if they go 6-6 and 7-5 and lose games by 35.
Well, that's different.
They're going to be furious.
All right. Let's move on here. I want to talk about Charles Chip Kelly.
Okay.
We've got a category on our list here.
Mm-hmm.
For coaches we're shocked aren't succeeding. I've got Charles Chip Kelly in that bucket. My hunch is that you don't. You've never thought he's going to succeed.
I became a broken record of, I don't know if you're getting Oregon, Chip. I don't know if you're getting Oregon, Chip. I said that a lot early on.
We got a question in this regard from Marcelo.
Yeah.
And he asks...
Good, dear friend of the show.
Dear friend of the show.
Yeah.
He wants to know, has Charles Chip Kelly been a fraud this whole time?
Oh, no.
Or is he ruined post-NFL? Or is UCLA just a poisonous place for anyone trying to succeed there?
Right.
The answer could be affirmative to all of those questions, frankly, but I'm going to defer to you. I know you're the Charles Chip Kelly, the CCK expert here of the show. I'm going to let you take it, but just let me say this. In prepping for this podcast, I believe I've discovered that I am a Charles Chip Kelly apologist.
Are you?
I think I am. I think I am. And it takes a man to admit that. I can't come to grips with the fact that maybe he's not that great. I cannot comprehend it.
Here are some problems with, I think, fully believing in UCLA short, medium term, maybe long term, though there's something there. He hasn't really made changes. He made a change in the secondary coach he brought over from Navy. I like the fact that Jimbo made changes at Texas A&M. I like that Mario Cristobal made changes at Oregon. These guys aren't necessarily happy with standing pat if a specific unit isn't performing or if a specific coach isn't recruiting and pulling his weight in that way. The offense and defense, I guess, improve from okay and bad to from bad and a disaster. They're investing a whole lot in Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who I think is... okay. I'm not super high on him. I usually, by this time, by year three, like to see something encouraging. I don't feel like I've seen that. They're not recruiting all that well, and that's sort of by design because Chip Kelly wants, that buy-in, toughness, smarts, and he's offering the blue chip guys who have that, but for whatever reason, they're not interested in UCLA. So the talent level isn't great. The dudes on offense aren't great, which is very strange to see from what we perceive to be a very smart offensive mind. I still believe he is. They beat Wazoo in the crazy comeback last year. They beat Stanford. They gave up 50 to Oregon State in a loss. They lost to San Diego State, destroyed by Utah. They battled with USC a little bit, but they lose that game comfortably. I think they gave up 50-plus in that one as well. So I've seen a lot of, you know, our friend Bruce Feldman had a long write-up about UCLA, and he seems pretty optimistic about the depth and the type of talent they have. A lot of track speed. Bruce is high on track speed, Ty. I don't know if you know about that.
I do.
I just watched UCLA football last year, and I understand it's going to be a big climb, and I understand, you know, and I think Marcel is a USC fan, so take the term poisonous or whatever with a grain of salt. UCLA is just generally going to be an uphill climb football-wise. I don't think there's full buy-in there. You're playing in front of a third full stadium in the Rose Bowl. It's just the football tradition is not there. That's a basketball school. So that's always going to be difficult. I thought he would have this team in a bowl in year two.
No.
3-9 to 4-8.
Tough schedule this past year, though.
It gets easier this year.
Yeah.
But not in a bowl year two? In a down Pac-12? Herm Edwards, Kevin Sumlin, yeah, David Shaw taking a step back, Oregon State rebuilding, Oregon with a brand new coach. I mean, Oregon had the talent, but Colorado going through a ton, can't get them to a bowl. I don't know. I am surprised they're not in a bowl. I'm not surprised they're not 10-2.
Very difficult schedule last year.
Yeah.
They had an Oklahoma game in there. Some tough road spots at Utah.
Yeah, they opened at Cincinnati and they were shorthanded. They were missing a ton of players against Cincinnati and lose that game.
But this year, I do think it comes back a little bit in their direction.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Are they in a bowl game? We'll preview in, you know, a little bit, but are they in a bowl game this year?
I think so. Gut? Yeah, okay. I think so.
All right.
I think so. I don't know about 8-4, but 6-6, yeah,
okay.
I think.
I don't think they're an opportunity truck team yet, though. I don't think they're built for that. I like Kyle Phillips. But outside of that, I don't know.
Some other questions here. By the way, are there any other coaches on this list that you want to throw out there? Are there any other coaches that you're shocked aren't succeeding?
I was pretty shocked that Joe Moorhead couldn't make it work at Mississippi State. He clearly wasn't the answer for all parties, I suppose. But I was surprised by that. I was pretty surprised Willie Taggart couldn't get Florida State to operational. I'm surprised with talent on both sides, given, yes, there were some very specific weaknesses. I see you, former Florida State offensive line. But that was surprising me. Chad Morris, not as much. I wasn't that impressed with what he did at SMU, and Arkansas is going to be a heavy lift. Matt Luke, I liked the coordinator hires last year, but that was sort of a situation that seemed like he was set up to fail.
The Taggart one is I think the big one to me, because especially if you consider the situation, the manner in which he left Oregon to go to Florida State. Florida State was deemed as his dream job, you know, the dream job. Those two words, they bring a lot of gravitas.
If he doesn't take it now, when will it come open again? Yeah.
He seemed like such a sure thing. And in reality, it was anything but it. It failed spectacularly. We'll see where they go now with Mike Norvell. But Willie Taggart is coaching elsewhere, and that one will forever remain a surprise to me. Just don't get it.
Yeah, he is just not a major Power 5 head coach. That is what I have learned, both from watching him coach at Oregon and at Florida State. And, you know, perhaps he will succeed at FAU, and we'll get some good football from the Owls.
Are there any buy low candidates in this field? So maybe coaches that aren't doing as well as you'd expect, but you could still buy low on them. Are there any coaches that maybe you want to sell high where it's looking good now, but you doubt it's going to last? I'll throw Billy Napier out there.
Are you buying high?
I would
I like
sell
Billy Napier.
I love him. Yeah. I'm selling high because I think
I love him.
Yeah, I love him. I do. I think he's not long for that job at Louisiana. I think
because he's going to get a bigger job because he'll go to South Carolina or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think
he did coach at Clemson. It didn't end well.
The South Carolina move could be interesting if it falls through with Will Muschamp at some point in time. But that's the only reason I would sell high on him. I think he's a really good coach.
Yeah, I mean, he's coached, I guess, in a couple different areas of the country. He was at ASU for a little while. Obviously, spent time at Alabama. Man, his timing could work out. I think it's still probably too big a jump from the Ragin' Cajuns to the Tide. If he goes 12-0 this year and finally gets over App State, I think they lost to the Mountaineers twice last year. He could position himself well, but that seems still like a pretty big leap to Alabama if a Saban retirement is imminent.
That's a huge leap. I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, it's big. It's definitely big. But that that job, and I know we have questions about, you know, who would take over at Alabama. Is it Mario Cristobal? Is it Jeremy Pruitt? You know, Billy Napier also on the Saban tree. Would they go outside of the tree and really try to go after Dabo kind of thing? Although it's Alabama tree, not Saban tree. That's a lot of pressure. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure to be the guy after the capitalist T, the guy. So I don't know specifically if that's attractive to these competitive dudes, or they're going to have to find a guy who's willing to do it. So no, I've been crazy impressed with what Billy Napier did at Louisiana. They go, I think, 7-5 to 10-2. Offense is nice. So
I think he's a good coach. I really do.
He is.
I really do.
He definitely is. And I think, unless there is something we don't know about him from a personality standpoint or a previous relationship with ADs or agents standpoint, almost like there were like whispers about Mike Norvell and why wasn't he getting a bigger job until he got Florida State, I think Billy Napier is set to get something interesting.
Question here from Phil, Dan.
Yes.
Have the Gators topped out at New Year's Six Bowls? This is a real question. Have the Gators topped out at New Year's Six Bowls?
New Year's!
Yeah, with Mullen at the helm. This is a ridiculous question, Phil, and I love you for listening. Thank you for asking.
No, I don't think this is a ridiculous question.
What?
I think this is a good question. I think relative to how Florida fans feel about Dan Mullen, like he is going to be a good coach, but never a great coach, that they're worried that he has a very specific
ceiling.
So you're
looking at this from a different perspective than I am here.
Within the context of Florida expectations and recent Florida history of winning two national championships in the mid-aughts.
I mean, they're not going to get Tim Tebow walking back through that door, but I feel like they are building in a very responsible way. I feel like Dan Mullen is going to fully harness that offense and that Florida will be atop the SEC East before long. I feel very good about their chances there. And no, I don't think they're topping out in a New Year's Six Bowl game.
The context for Florida right now to me is Urban Meyer built and succeeded and had top 1, 2, 3 national recruiting classes when Nick Saban didn't exist at Alabama. And when Kirby Smart, for even not being a champion yet in terms of national or, an ongoing SEC threat for 5, 6, 7 years, he's recruiting like crazy. Georgia is amassing talent in a crazy impressive way. Dan Mullen's recruiting classes have been 14-9-9, and I think the incomplete one right now is 7. He is putting together top 10 classes. Year one was pretty good. The loss to Kentucky is probably going to ring louder for Florida fans than any win that season. They weren't great against LSU last year, but they were competitive. They closed the gap against Georgia from where they were. The question to me is, because he's recruited well enough, especially on defense, a lot of speed on the roster, in the depth chart right now, backups, the youth is encouraging. I don't know what the quarterback situation of the future looks like. If it's Emory Jones, I think Anthony Richardson is the true freshman this season. I don't know that they have, in the way that those great Florida teams did, the crazy speed and talent at running back and receiver. That to me, I like their tight end. I like Kylie Pitts. Yet. But again, if I'm going to hold this against Scott Frost within, the Gator binoculars that, Florida fans wear, not having that going into year three, a depth there, given where Florida is, given what Florida has built up its brand to be, it's a concern. And as we've seen, as things trend more and more towards offense, as Alabama and Clemson load up on these amazing receivers and running backs that are in New York that are getting drafted in the first round, and Florida doesn't have anything near that, but those are the teams that they have to go through to take that next step, now having been a New Year's Six champ, I'm worried.
I'm not worried.
And maybe 7 of them emerge this year. but we haven't consistently seen it these first couple years. Again, I like the tight end. I like Kyle Pitts. But
all right, settle down.
My concern about are Florida fans going to get sick of 10-2? I think they might.
Orange Greeno, who has the best chance to win a national championship in the SEC West outside of Bama, Auburn, or LSU current coaches?
Who's your favorite friend outside of Chandler, Joey, Rachel, Phoebe?
This is also ridiculous question because outside of Bama, Auburn, and LSU, your options are the Mississippi schools, both of which have turned over their coach, Arkansas with another new coach and Sam Pittman, or Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
I believe both of us are pro Jimbo at this point. We're a fan of Jimbo, yes?
I think so, but it's also similar. I'm putting together the puzzle pieces from the other schools I've talked about. When are they going to get a downfield passing game consistently with Jimbo Fisher, getting Christian Ponder and EJ Manuel, all these guys drafted in the first round, and Jameis to a Heisman and national championship? When is that going to happen?
I think I feel better about A&M than I do Auburn.
You would take the next 3 years. I mean, I'm not a Bo Nix fan, but I don't know. Auburn keeps winning big games.
They win big games.
They've beaten Alabama, what, two of the past 3 years?
They win big games, and the recruiting has been very strong.
Yeah.
But I think just for me personally, based solely on anecdotal personal evidence here, I am so tired of the every other year Gus Malzahn, will he or won't he get fired thing.
No, it's play calling, Ty.
Whatever it is.
Give up play calling. Yeah, I know. No,
whatever it is.
The firing thing is real. Yeah.
Jimbo's probably not going anywhere because they gave him a contract that has Texas with a dollar sign on it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a much more stable situation.
I'm worried that there's a super rich man's Kevin Sumlin situation too at play. Chip Kelly thing at play.
Mm. All right.
Where this is his, cashing out on all of his earlier efforts stage. I don't know. I hope not.
We got time for two more questions, Dan. You get to pick them.
All right. Let's go to, we've actually answered a bunch of these. Somebody asked who the most stylish of these coaches was. I did research. I don't know if you looked up these guys and their clothing choices.
Scott Frost with a flat brim is a good look.
Has he worn the flat brim? Usually he's ultra curved.
I've seen him. Oregon he wore flat brim.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That was a decent look.
I don't recall.
It's hard for me to go against Sumlin here.
Sumlin looked good. I looked at all of their opening pressers. Sumlin looked good. I think I'm actually going to give it to Frost. I looked up all of these coaches' introductory press conferences where they generally have to wear the color tie of the school, whatever.
No.
And maybe it's because Scott Frost is just a trimmer dude than a lot of these guys. But even pictures that were not introductory press conference shots, I think Scott Frost wins the style icon of the Solid Verbal Award.
I think that's right. Okay. Speaking of which, I don't know if I've ever seen a picture of Jonathan Smith before.
Really?
We've done the Hudson News test with Clay Helton. If Jonathan Smith knocked on my door, I wouldn't know it's him.
He's more recognizable to me than because he also played relatively recently than Clay Helton in a Hudson News. But I don't think either of these guys are going to be in a lot of Hudson News is moving forward. I have one final question, Ty.
Yep.
Will you walk me in detail through school dance history, how you asked, who you went with, how...
Don't make me do this, Dan.
How much you just went for it on the dance floor? Did you spike the punch? Just give me an outline here.
I'm not giving
because
you an outline.
Because this is junior prom.
You're not getting an outline. I didn't go to my junior prom.
We didn't have a junior prom. We had dances, though, twice a year. So who did you go? You went to your senior prom? Was that the only dance you went to?
Yeah, actually, it was. Yeah. And on the question about going for it on the dance floor, at the time of my senior prom, Will Smith's Wild Wild West was a big hit. And I took it upon myself with...
So what, is this the year 2000?
The year 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really went for it during Wild Wild West.
And what does that mean?
A circle that formed around me as I did a dance.
What is this dance?
I don't know what it was. It wasn't good, whatever it was, but I was into the song and I just went for it. And the circle formed around me. I'd like to think that was my start as a performer, as you know. That is what we do here. And that was really the lasting memory.
Who did you take to prom? A friend or like a legitimate date, a girlfriend?
A friend.
At the time?
No, it was more a friend. Yeah.
Okay.
At the time.
Did you ask in a creative way?
No.
Ty.
No.
You didn't even put together like a 192 kbps file to somehow include?
You might be stunned to learn this, but this was a little bit before the dawn of the MP3 era. Yeah.
Did you have a high school girlfriend at all that you would have taken to a dance had you been together at the time? And there was
it's sort of a loaded question, Dan.
I'm ready to hear the answer, Ty. People have been listening to the show for 12 years. They want to feel like they know you.
Yeah. No, my girlfriend in high school was baseball and playing baseball 24/7. And so, no, there was no special someone my senior year.
When you say you went for it on the dance floor, did you do any freaking?
Freaking? No, no freaking.
Yeah.
No freaking.
You didn't do... Did your friends, did people, was Northampton High School freak forward?
I
were there people going for it in that way? Was it a physical dance floor?
I remember it being very tame. All these years later, I remember it being very tame. Nothing exciting.
See, we had dances twice a year. I don't think I went my freshman year, but I went the first one my sophomore year. I don't know if I went to the second one. Then I had a girlfriend junior and senior year, so I went to those dances with her. So there wasn't an excitement around asking questions and just trying to figure out creative ways because it was just assumed. I still tried to be
creative.
This was
pre-promposal era.
Correct. This is pre-promposal era. But I will say Calabasas High, turn of the century, was very freak forward on the dance floor.
Okay.
People making out.
Whoa.
People, I don't know.
We didn't have much of that.
Were pre-gaming?
No.
Or what was going on? I did it sober, Ty. I went for it sober because...
You still do to this day.
I do. I really do. I drink a little more than I did in high school, but I went for it and it felt great. I don't know if you have the Too Close music, Ty, ready.
Play it again here. It's fine.
Yeah, please. But it's
bring
a fine
it in,
line.
Bring it in soft here in the background?
It's a fine line, though. What you push yourself to do because you don't want to go too freak forward, if you know what I'm saying, Ty. Then it can get strange.
The little poke coming through.
What about now, like weddings? Will you go for it on the dance floor? You won't freak with your wife on a wedding dance floor.
I mean, not at this point, no.
I try every single wedding. I get shot down, Ty. Just trying to bring a little excitement. A little sexiness to the dance floor. I'm bummed to hear that. Do you think if you were to go back now with your current brain in a high school body,
right?
And this is going to a weird territory. But do you think you would be better about like asking somebody that you would want to go
probably,
to a dance with, to
with
a
the
dance?
Benefit okay. of yeah, 20 years okay. of
I don't know. Ty,
of,
you work
of
in
life
IT.
Life and mileage.
I don't know. I don't
I
know
think
your
so.
Life. Okay, man.
Right.
Oh man, I wore a lot of gel in my hair. I did
you?
Regis like tie matching the shirt thing, silver shirt, silver tie. Remember the Who Wants
I
to
do.
Be a Millionaire look?
I do. Yeah,
totally went for that.
Oh, yeah, man. I sort of didn't know what to do with my hair. It actually looked a lot then, like it does now.
Did you do a post prom? Did everybody go to a hotel to get trashed? Was that a thing at Northampton?
There was a friend's house that a lot of folks went to get trashed. I did not.
We had a hotel, I think, because parents were worried about drunk driving. So everybody just sort of had hotel rooms, which in retrospect, wow, very, very out there.
Speaking of freak forward.
Yeah, freak forward. But did you go to that post-prom party
no,
where people
I didn't
were
go.
Drinking?
No. Didn't go?
I went to the hotel where like, maybe three quarters of our class was. And boy, do you learn a lot about people when they no longer have to go to school with you. Whole just people roaming the hallways, just obliterated 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
Obliterated and doing things that you're like, I'm sorry, you got an A in calculus. And this is how you, oh my God. It was great, Ty. I can still vividly see that night. And I'm sorry you didn't get to experience something like that.
I have ruined all my street cred here.
Man, Ty, I could tell you, we will, as soon as we disconnect, I will tell you stories.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to everyone out there for downloading. Yeah. And if you've made it this far, congratulations. Thank you.
Yeah.
Once more for your support of the show.
And tell us your prom stories.
Tell us your prom stories. Yeah.
People, you know, and it can be private. You can just DM us on Instagram or you can send us an email. I want to hear good, you know, crazy, embarrassing junior prom, senior prom, post prom. Lay it all on the line. It's all private.
I'll see if I can get a prom photo from Mama H.
I'll send you my prom photo. We can both post our prom photos.
I'm fine with that.
Instagram.com/solidverbal. How's that sound?
Instagram.com/solidverbal. Don't forget, we've also got a Twitter. We've also got a Facebook. And sign up for that newsletter at solidverbal.com. You can find the sign up form right under the main area, a big old yellow form. We won't spam you, but we are going to be sending one out tomorrow. And in subsequent weeks, talking about some of the cool and exciting things we have in the pipeline.
Freaked.
Sound good?
Forward. Yeah, I'm great.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildebrandt, we will catch you all, 2 days from now. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.